You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
The praise is pouring in on everything we do from every angle. Someone writes in, I love the show, but maybe the Le Batard Show shouldn't try to talk about golf. It's painful to listen to show members we all love try to speak about golf. No expertise at all. Super annoying. Even the Gotts, the self-proclaimed expert, is so not the expert.
Is that guy?
Also, Spencer Hall needs to up his sound quality. This sounded like he was being recorded by a 2005 Motorola RAZR in a racquetball court. Please, God.
Is that guy?
Razor, please, God, someone at Metal Arc tell him to buy a real microphone.
Is that guy?
Billy, did you make the oh no sound because I said Razor, A-R-A-Z-R?
It was a good save, though. It was a save, yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Billy. Always there for me.
I'm here, man.
Do you know what a Razor is, Dan?
I do not know. I don't know what a Motorola Razor is.
You don't?
No.
I bet you had one.
I did not have one.
Really? Well, let's walk through your phone history. What kind of phones have you
had? I never
had
a Motorola Razor. I did not have a Motorola Razor.
What was your first phone?
Ooh.
Not a Motorola
Telegraph
Razor.
Telegraph machine? After that.
The Motorola Razor, Dan, was the one that was like really, really thin, that it flipped over, but it was like as thin as like a razor blade. Yeah. That's why they called it the Razor.
What is a telegraph machine?
I don't know. They had one in Downton Abbey. The
what?
Titanic, stop. Has sunken, stop. John Jacob Astor, stop. Is missing, stop.
You think that was my phone? You think that my first phone was the Titanic's emergency signal? The way that the Titanic communicated before sinking into the sea is what you believe is my first telephone.
I was just making an old joke, Dan.
Yeah.
What kind of phone did you have? Were you a BlackBerry guy?
Nokia?
I never
Snake.
Had a BlackBerry. I don't know whether I must have started with
you had a
iPhone.
Palm Pilot. You
no,
had,
I, no, I didn't
on.
Have a flip phone either. Never had a flip phone. I started...
So
never,
you just got an iPhone. That's
I had
all
you
had
a sidekick. I had a landline for a long time.
A landline?
Yes.
So you don't remember your first cell phone?
Do not. No. I don't remember a phone that wasn't the kind that I use now, that was whatever the original incarnation was of the iPhone.
I remember being a massive deal when I got a hand-me-down BlackBerry.
Oh, I love my BlackBerry.
I mean, why are you...
I was so sad like a couple months ago when they officially stopped BlackBerry service. I haven't had a BlackBerry in like 6 or 7 years, but dude, BBM was a...
Brick breaker. There will never be another cell phone game like Brick Breaker. Oh. I miss it so.
Amin, what are you shocked by that I can't remember? Amin is floating throughout that I can't remember what my first phone was, or that it wasn't a Motorola Razor and it was not a flip phone.
First of all, how do you not remember the Motorola Razor? It's one thing to say, oh, I forgot that they spelled it this weird kind of quirky way with no O in there. But to say, altogether, do not remember this phone that was, it broke people's minds.
Iconic.
How could a cell phone be that thin?
It was like it was right before like iPhones took off. So like this was the phone that like all the rich kids in your high school had. Yeah. They're like, oh, yeah. I'm jealous.
The pink one. Oh my God, the girls with the pink razors. Yeah. They were the girls who peaked in seventh grade.
Unquestionably a status symbol to have a Motorola
razor.
That
was really mean. I take that back.
Wait, I want to play this game. Does Dan remember this phone? Dan, do you remember the Sidekick?
Wow. That's a big shout. It's the first cell phone. It was the first cell phone that had a full-length keyboard, right?
The QWERTY.
Oh, the QWERTY.
Dan, can you name a phone?
This is the problem that I was having the other day. I was trying to figure out. You would think that it would be a seismic remember where you are type of event. On when did you learn how to communicate by texting? When did your phone experience change, where your phone went from being something you only used to communicate by voice into something else. I'm old enough to remember getting to a stadium and not being able to find your friends because most of the people did not have cell phones. You had, I'm old enough to remember a time where people got lost and could not reach each other. And I don't remember when that changed.
Oh, that was the best when you could pretend to get lost and no one could call you out on it. Cause like now everything that you have tracks you and you can just get a Waze or whatever to take you anywhere you go. So you can't really get lost unless you're a total idiot now. Right. Where before it was just like, I don't want to go to this thing. Oh, I couldn't find your house. I got lost. I asked someone at the gas station. They sent me the wrong way. Oh, sorry. See you next time.
Let me paint a picture for Jessica and Witty and all the other young people in the room. It used to be if I said to Dan, hey, let's meet at the mall, 3:30, Aventura Mall, meet you by the food court. Cool. And then if I got there at 3:30 and Dan wasn't there, the only recourse I had was to pick up the phone and call his mom and says, did Dan leave the house? And she says, yes. Welp, that's it. I don't know what, like, you know what?
I guess he was kidnapped.
Exactly.
Was it a payphone?
That's all you had.
You had to go to like the payphone bank at the Aventura Mall and call Dan. But then what if you don't have her number? Because how would you have everybody's her number?
You knew everybody's number.
Yeah,
you knew everybody's number.
You had to memorize numbers back then.
Huh.
You knew everybody's number.
But you guys all remember this transition? Because I was trying to think the other day, why don't I remember the first time? Never mind it changed over to email, the idea that you wouldn't mail somebody something with a stamp. I don't remember how it is that I was indoctrinated there. And I also have no recollection whatsoever how I transitioned from communicating by phone, using my phone as a phone, to never mind, I'm never answering the phone again. I'm not listening to voicemail. I will only communicate with you by text. I don't have recollection of when that transition took place or how or what the devices were that I was using in order to make that transition.
Well, you're also skipping the pre-text, post-cell phone, when cell phones were like really expensive to make any call, which was the beeper, where you had the beeper code. So if you wanted to page someone, you could send them messages with the beeper codes. You just had to remember what the numbers represented.
And there was also, this is sort of in and around the time of AIM, right? You had AOL Instant Messenger as well. That was a key form of communication as well.
80% of the time, people are not actually away, right? You're just catfishing. You put the away message out there to see if someone's going to
showering,
like,
be back in five.
Yeah, but you're really just sitting there being a smelly old person, and you're like, let me just see if this person, now that they see that I went away, will send me the message because they didn't want to talk to me at the time and they wanted to get my away message.
Hold on. You guys had actual, honest-to-God away messages?
Of course.
Messages, mine were Fall Out Boy lyrics. Oh,
mine were exactly. Well, mine were always like a lyric from a song or the name of a movie or something like that.
Jeremy,
where
and
is your boy tonight? I hope he is a gentleman.
Jessica and old. Jeremy had the same Fall Out Boy lyrics.
We're going down, down in an earlier round.
We're going down, swinging.
What was your aim away message, Dan?
Yeah,
I don't remember, Billy.
Nachos.
You know, I probably shouldn't be doing this, but here we are. So, in detention at...
You got detention?
I got detention because I was late. So, after like 6 or 7 lates, you get a detention tardiness, right?
The lamest of detentions.
Yeah, I wasn't really a bad boy. Yeah. So, in detention, the vice principal, who was also one of like the head disciplinarians at the school, was also... A Rottweiler breeder, or like big into like the Rottweiler, big into like the Rottweiler world and like the local dog shows. Yeah, like big into the scene of Rottweilers, right? So she made the mistake of having her AIM open while she was like at detention, right? And like everyone saw her screen name. So then everybody like passed around like, this is this person's screen name if you want to like, you know,
the
mess with this
fighting
person.
452?
No. So they had the screen name, right? And this person's away message was doing rots of things.
Oh, no.
It's a terrible pun.
Or got rots of things to do because she was in the Rottweiler game. You know what I mean?
Billy, thought of you this weekend when Jennifer Lopez was quoted as saying that she was not happy with the halftime show. She was not happy with having to share her 14 minutes with Shakira. She thinks an artist of her stature should be get the whole performance and not have to share it with Shakira. She was quoted in a Los Angeles Times interview as using a lot of F words to describe how she felt about being forced to share the stage. One of a memorable halftime show, a halftime show that was super sensual on behalf of a conservative NFL that got really outraged on behalf of its television partners when Janet Jackson had a nipple showing. It was a super sensual shared halftime show, and J-Lo did not like sharing it with Shakira. She thought she should have at least gotten 6 or 7 minutes or made it a 20-minute halftime show instead of them celebrating just 14 shared minutes.
That was sad. I didn't like to see that. They have a documentary coming out about it, right? Like, I think it's like...
Is it just about that, or is it about J-Lo in general? Is it just about the halftime show?
I think it's about the halftime show. I thought it was...
Called halftime?
I think so, yeah. So I would assume it's just about the halftime show, unless this is halftime of J-Lo's career and she's going to live to be 100.
I took the preview as it's just a J-Lo doc, and for some reason they're calling it halftime. I'm going to look that up. I could be wrong.
Regardless, coming from the documentary is the news that she believes that two Latin icons shouldn't have had to share a space, that the space should have been widened, that an artist of their stature who was not Latin, that she was not quoted as this, but one of her handlers was quoted as saying, normally you would get an entire 10-minute, 14-minute situation if you had J-Lo's catalog. Forgive me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, but is that about her being Latin?
It's
and
just
thinking-
J-Lo, for the record, that this doc that we're talking about. It's her doc.
Yeah, but is that about, like, we think that Latin people shouldn't share it, or is that J-Lo thinks J-Lo shouldn't have to share it?
Well, this was not J-Lo being quoted this way. This was one of her handlers being quoted as saying that her and Shakira should not have had to share a space that an artist of their stature, who was not a Latin woman, would have gotten 14 minutes. The Weeknd didn't get... The Weeknd did not have to go 6 minutes, go as hard as he can, as fast as he can. What J-Lo is saying, what about my library? My stardom is better... Give me more time. This is unacceptable to stuff my entire library into 5 minutes.
Well, the NFL disagreed. And it was a great halftime show, by the way.
Well, so. That's also what the Super Bowl is, right? The Super Bowl is medleys, and you do a minute and 40 seconds of every song. And isn't that, I believe that's why Outkast has never done the Super Bowl, because Andre 3000 artistically didn't want to agree to that. That's basically what it is.
This last halftime show had like 6 people sharing it. Eminem had like 1 song. And then 50 Cent was hanging there. He looked like he was going to pass out. Remember that?
Well, to her point, so like 3 years ago, Maroon 5 did it. That's a group. So I don't know if you can compare it. But then the year before was Justin Timberlake. And I believe he had a couple guests join him. But like it was his set, right?
He's also a bigger star than J-Lo.
Well, I guess that's her point, is that like, why is she considered less of a star? Is it because she's a woman and women in the music industry tend to be trampled on? Now, I can see her argument for that. I don't really know enough on the subject to make a counter-argument.
Well, Juju is making fun of the J-Lo library. She is. It's not much of a library, evidently.
Well, and also, I'm sorry, was there a switcheroo that happened? They say, hey, you're doing the Super Bowl halftime. Cool. And then when she shows up, why is Shakira here? Hold on. Are you telling me now I don't get the full... They knew what it was. If you didn't agree with it artistically, you could be like Andre 3000 saying, you know what? Not for me. This thing that, by the way, I don't get paid for. You do it for free. So, stop complaining about it years later. At the time, why don't you say something? Stop it.
Because it's maximum diva behavior. This is exactly how you should behave. If you're a diva with a flimsy catalog, you should say, I deserve more than 5 or 6 minutes. I don't need to share the stage with Shakira.
I think that Shakira's songs are bigger than Jennifer Lopez.
They are.
She-Wolf, away message from 2008.
Really?
Oh, yeah, wow. Big time. Same with Hips Don't Lie. Didn't know what it meant. Yeah. Always posting that on
Wow.
I still don't know what it means. What do you mean the hips don't lie? They do a polygraph test? It is a bummer, though, because I think that Super Bowl halftime show is in the pantheon of one of the greatest of all time. And it sucks that J-Lo had a bad takeaway from it, regardless of her intent and if you agree with it or not. It's just a bummer to hear, because I really enjoyed it. And I wish that they had enjoyed making it as much as I enjoyed dancing to it from the press box.
How bad is the J-Lo library? Because
waiting for tonight. That's Jenny it? From the block.
And that's it? That's what we've got? That's about 5 or 6 minutes of material?
J-Lo's library isn't bad. It's just get over yourself. 50 Cent, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, everybody shared the stage. And like Amin said, boy, you signed up for it before your ass hopped up on the stage. So, excuse me, ma'am, calm down. You Jenny from the block, we respect you. But Fly Girl, calm down.
All right, thank
you. She also decided to let her daughter sing one of her songs. Like, you want more time? Tell your kid, hey, go back to school.
Oh,
it's mommy's
God.
Night.
Billy.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. You want more time, that Super Bowl halftime show? Tell your kid it's mommy's time. Go back to school.
Go back to school.
She could just be trying to sell a doc, too, right? I know that's kind of being cynical, but, you know, now we're all talking about it. I'm more interested in this doc now because of it.
Oh, but isn't a J-Lo doc interesting to you anyway? Or no, not really?
It's called halftime. So she seems to be leaning into this controversy.
I thought you said it was called J-Lo.
No, it's called Halftime.
He said it's about J-Lo.
I said, no, it's just, we were debating whether this was a doc on the Halftime show. This is a J-Lo doc for some reason called Halftime.
You don't like it. You said you also don't like something else, Billy, today. This has been your move lately. You just say...
I stole it from Tony, honestly. Well, I'll admit it. Tony will say that in the corner. He'll just say, I don't like that. And I said, you know what? That's a good little line to toss in there.
Well, you've stolen it, but not only have you stolen it, you've used it in some places where I've been surprised. For example, very historically this weekend, Billy had one of the proudest moments that a parent can have, where a child, you are present as the child is taking the first steps. And Billy says, first steps, don't like it.
Well, it's a game changer. Like, now it's over.
Yeah, now she's on the move.
Exactly. Now I can't just say, hey, go sit in the corner. Like, we'll be fine here. Now, like, I need to actually go and put in all of the little plastic things and all of the electrical outlets. Before, I just had, like, the electrical outlets that I knew she could get to. Now it's, like, all of them. I need to tie everything closed so we're not opening things. It's just a lot of work. Could we have waited a couple months?
Billy, I'm telling you right now, man, and the worst part is the mobility and then the ability to stand up and reach higher things that were prior to unreachable.
Drawers are going to get open now.
Yeah.
Yep. And watch out for this one where they take your keys and then they hide them somewhere.
Oh, I hate that. My passport was missing the other day when I found it in my daughter's room.
Identity theft.
What? She like pulled it out of like our drawer where we keep these things. I was like, I guess we got to move this.
This is why safes were invented. It's not for burglars. It's for children.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Levitard Show. Were safes invented not for burglars, but for children who steal passports? At Levitard Show. Billy, what happened this weekend? Was it all unpleasant? Was it all...
No, it was lovely to see. It was nice, but it was also like, okay, well now it's over. Now we have to pay very close attention. Where before it's like, hey, you know, go in your playpen, play with your toys that make a lot of noise that I can't figure out how to turn the volume down on. But now it's like, I need to watch you because you could climb over the edge of that playpen and then you could be down the hall and you could be jumping around in the toilet for some reason.
You ever have where it's like 11 p.m. at night, the playroom is like dark and then all of a sudden a toy just starts making a noise and it scares the shit out of you?
Yeah.
Because it's like, what triggered this toy right now at 11 p.m.?
Well, Billy has a ghost, so that's probably
I have a ghost. But my ghost only turns on and off the light over the stove.
My ghost?
Yeah, my ghost.
That ghost?
Well, the ghost that lives with me only turns on and off the hood vent light.
How do you know you don't live with the ghost? How long have you lived in that place?
Well, no, I think that I moved into the ghost's house.
All right, so it's not you're the ghost's human. That's not your ghost. The ghost doesn't live with you.
You don't have ownership over this ghost.
Yeah, but if you're a ghost, you don't need to stay in one place. Well, if I'm a ghost, I'm going everywhere, man.
That's what I'm
thinking. Every night I'm somewhere else. I'm staying in one house.
I do more than just turn on and off hood vent lights, too, if I was a ghost, right?
Being a ghost would be dope.
Hold on. You think, Chris, that this ghost has full agency just to go wherever it wants?
I imagine you're just invisible. You're invisible, and you can do whatever the hell you want.
No, man. Don't you know anything about ghosts? They're always like tied to the place they are because of some trauma that happened there. If it were up to them, of course they'd be on the French Riviera.
They should go to therapy, though. Are there ghost therapists?
You should be one.
You're French of the Riviera. Belief, Chris. You're of the belief that a ghost is not trapped within that a ghost can haunt multiple homes.
I just believe that a ghost can work through this and talk to somebody about it, and then they can be like, okay, I feel good now to go off and scare other people.
I'm with Chris. I don't think we should be putting ghosts in boxes and say that ghosts can only be there to torment people and terrorize people. If I was a ghost, I would be like, you know what? It's exhausting being so scary all the time. Like, I just want to be a fun ghost. I just want to have fun. I want to go to the French Riviera, as we were saying before. But do I board an airplane? Can I just float across the ocean? How do I get there as a ghost? These are things that I would do. What do I do if my ghost daughter steals my ghost passport? I don't know.
See, this is why people write in talking about, I love this show, but they don't know what they're talking about. Because right now, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Oh, a ghost therapist? Hello, have you ever seen the movie Ghost? That's what Whoopi Goldberg was. They have to come to her, and they have to ask her, and she has to tell them and tell their living relatives, like, what are the things to get her, to get them back to, like, living a normal life, and they could go to the afterlife. What? All these ghosts were trapped in the middle. They don't want to be here. You think they want to be here? They don't want to be here. They want to be in heaven. Probably not hell, but they want to be in heaven. But they're stuck in the middle because of some unresolved trauma. And so there are these people, these mediums, who have to communicate with the dead to tell their living relatives, hey, this is how your Aunt Bunny can go to heaven now and live her afterlife as it was. What are you guys talking about? Like, oh, I wish I would be a fun ghost. Like Casper? You ever know how Casper, the friendly ghost?
I don't think all
ghosts...
You know
how Casper happened?
I don't think all ghosts want to scare people.
Yeah, that's true.
But why does dying have to be so final?
It's not. That's why they're ghosts.
I don't think all ghosts want to scare people. I think they happen to be ghosts. They want to live their lives. And when they live their lives, they end up scaring the shit out of people. And it's like, damn, I'm sorry. I just want to go to McDonald's right now. I'm sorry that this door opening and you don't see anybody scares the shit out of you. Like, I can't eat McDonald's without scaring you. Like, I can't, like, what do you want from me here? I'm gonna just sit in this closet all day? I need to live my life.
There's a lot of pressure as a ghost, right? I'd try to be a sneaky ghost because I wouldn't want people to know that I was there, right? Like, if I go to McDonald's, I don't want to go behind the register and grab the fry and have people see fries floating around. Like, oh my God, there's a ghost here eating our fries. You know what I mean? I just go and I'd sneak a fry every once in a while. Just
maybe stand by the garbage when they throw it away, just like scoop it up real fast.
Exactly.
But then it's a floating fries flying away. See, it's tough out here.
It's hard being a ghost. I think we all can agree on. By the way, Whoopi Goldberg, EGOT. Yesterday, Jennifer Hudson, EGOT. Congrats, Jennifer. Anyways, back to ghosts.
At Lebatard Show on the poll question, I have a number of them here at Lebatard Show.
She got.
Do you imagine that a ghost haunts multiple homes? Or I guess I should say, how many homes can a ghost haunt? One? More than one? Because I think of ghosts as haunting only one home. Also, you're describing, when you say it's not your home, it's the ghost's home, you guys are describing that for them, we represent to the ghost what is the ghost's purgatory. Not where the ghost wishes to be. The ghost is trapped among us humans. The ghost does not wish to be here. The ghost, I thought, was trapped to a single house. I have not heard of a ghost going to multiple homes or multiple hauntings or to be a multifaceted two-way player of homes.
Now,
I've always thought it's just the ghost is one home.
Now it makes sense why they go to hotels often, because then they can be in one place and then get different people. So it's not always the same, you know, monogamous,
See, I'm the opposite. I think of the ghosts. People are like, oh, why are ghosts scary? Because you got to have these assholes living in your space.
That's
like,
true.
I got to deal. You know, it's like, can you imagine you're a ghost? Like, this is the house that I lived and died in. And oh my gosh, my life is unresolved. Well, maybe the next tenant will be cool. And then it's Billy. And it's like, why wouldn't you want to haunt this guy? Like, get out of here.
What's that supposed to be? I don't think I'm very hauntable. Why am I so hauntable?
You're easy to scare. You're afraid of everything.
Well, I was told that this is a friendly ghost, I'll have you know, and it's not haunting me. It's just hanging out.
I don't think that that's how that works. If there's a home in your home, if there's a ghost in your home, you're haunted, whether it's friendly or not. It's still haunted.
What if I have like a mansion and I make one of my rooms a ghost room? And I like put everything in there that ghosts would love. So now the ghost feels included. The ghost is like, oh, wow, this person made some effort. I'm not going to scare them now. I'm going to live peacefully.
Yeah.
Not a cat.
Jess agrees.
This has probably been one of my favorite conversations we've ever had on the show. And I have a lot of thoughts about ghosts, but I don't want to interrupt this.
Why?
Billy and Chris, like, you guys really are nailing it with the ghost
Thank
content
you.
Today. You guys have thought about
well,
this
where
for a
are
long
you?
Time.
But how much thought have you given it? Like,
too
where?
Too much. I don't, like, that's, I
really?
Have, I don't even know
the
where
Pfister
to begin.
The Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee is said to be haunted. There are
Hubba
all sorts
Hubba.
Of legendary stories. That was on the Pfister.
Yay.
I don't get
no,
it.
No, no, no.
Wow, that was...
Just keep moving. Keep it moving, Dan.
Too late.
I just want you to know, I'm not going to say the line. There was a line that was set out here.
Really?
And then everyone was like, Tony's like, go, Billy, say go. Yeah, and then
and
Whitney's
then
like, no,
yeah.
no, don't say it. So I usually like get a consent.
What was
I'm not gonna,
it? I didn't
I can't
hear
say it.
It
now.
Oh.
Yeah, it's great doing the show with you guys that way. The Pfister Hotel in Milwaukee is said to be haunted. NBA players, well, I mean, you know the stories, right? I mean, one in Oklahoma City, right, are said to be the two haunted hotels in the NBA?
Yep, yep. There's multiple stories of people hearing people rummaging inside your bathroom, find the sink turned on, all types of stuff. Kyrie Irving, I think, was one of the people who was like, I don't want to stay at this hotel, the one in Oklahoma City. I think it's called the Skirling or something like that. Because it's haunted. And they don't stay there anymore, by the way. They built some new hotel in town, and now all the teams stay there.
I mean, I wanted to talk to you because we were talking earlier in the show, in the first hour, we were talking about the finals and how hard it is, no matter how great someone is, to get into the pipeline of mainstream media conversation with talking again and again about how great someone is. But what Steph Curry is doing against that defense at a time that we're all watching and we're like, man, the Warriors, he needs more help. We're actually at the end of this run saying Steph needs more help. The shots that he's making, the places that he's making them from, the defense being played against him as he pulls everyone to him and has to drag Draymond around, who's not doing anything. I don't know where this goes in the Pantheon through four games, but I can't believe how well he's shooting, even as he's redefined the standard for what shooting is in that sport.
So I've been dying to come back on the show. I wanted that fraud Mike Ryan to show his face in the midst of these NBA finals, in the midst of this man's accomplishments, to let him tell me one more time that Steph doesn't show up for the big ones. By the way, before these finals started, do you guys know that Steph Curry's finals average in scoring was higher than Kobe's and Dirk's and Dwayne Wade's and Dr. J's, and Elgin Baylor's, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and a host of other players? He's 10th all-time, and he's going to move up that list at the end of these finals with the way he's played. This is the Steph Curry who has appeared in every single NBA Finals game other than the first two. We are literally stuck. People like Mike Ryan, I won't say we, because I'm only going to apply it to the numbskulls like Mike Ryan.
But there aren't a lot of Steph haters out there. This isn't totally a straw man. Yes. There are many, but I don't believe people. I mean, you've watched this sport for a long time. You have expertise. Everyone knows this is a made man. Like, it's nonsense to say anything otherwise about Steph Curry, finals MVP or not. Like, it's just sheer nonsense. But if you needed signature moments, he's just given them to you.
If you wanted a signature moment that wasn't sending Matthew Dellavedova to the hospital with dehydration to be observed overnight, if that wasn't signature enough for you, Mike Ryan, then he gave it to you in Boston when, as you said, Dan, nothing was going for anybody except for him, and he hits that big shot, and Ime Udoka calls timeout, and Steph Curry, who always is joyous, always is celebratory, always shaking and shimmying, I've never seen him be angry Michael Jordan, pissed after making a shot, because he MF'd the crowd and said, I'm mother effing Steph Curry, to the crowd walking away from his bench and flexing, and it was anger and it was rage, and it was, I could just sense that he was talking to every single Mike Ryan in the world who said, oh, he's not good, oh, he's not quite on this level. Put this in your level and smoke it. That's what he said right there. That's the next level. That's not signature enough. I don't know what needs to happen.
But I mean, do you not think that prior to these finals, he had not gone supernova Steph Curry? Steph Curry is an amazing player on an average night. But before these finals, I don't think we've seen a consistent level of performance like the one we've seen in these finals. Even in the games that they've lost, he's been tremendous. I understand he had one game against Toronto where I think he had 9 threes. Like, he's had some games, but consistently being the guy where it's a Tuesday night in December and you see on Twitter, flip on the Golden State game because Steph Curry's about to go off right now. I watched every one of those finals hoping for Steph to do that, and I just don't ever think he did, and yet he summoned it in every game of this series. Like, you can acknowledge that he's taken it to another level in these finals.
Could you not make the argument that the last game you saw him play, given what Boston's defense is and given that everything is structured around slowing him down, that that's the best game we've ever seen him play in a pivotal moment? And I know he's got better statistical games, but I'm allowing for what the opponent is trying to do to stop him, and I'm allowing for the diluted nature of these guys have been at it for 10 years, and they're an older team now.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
I don't want to be too extreme on this, but he failed America.
Stugatz.
Okay, very good.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
So what's happened is the context around him, right? All the things that people would love to say about him, which is, oh, he plays on a super team. Oh, he's got, like, all of these things are in his favor, basically. All of that has been stripped away. And now it's Steph Curry and a bunch of guys who probably passed their expiration date in terms of being super impactful in that way, and a bunch of guys who are too young. This is their first time at the rodeo, and they don't know what they're doing against a team that is very experienced, albeit not finals experience, and is what people are calling the best defense of this generation, right? So what's stripped away all those things, those helping factors, but it's still him. Again, Chris, you say, oh, we've never seen him go supernova. He sent a man to the hospital. When have you ever heard of someone hospitalizing his opponent in an NBA Finals? Jordan, Bird, Magic, none of them sent somebody to the hospital afterwards. He did that. So I disagree with the idea that we've never seen him go supernova. We've seen him do it. It's just we've always had the feeling that, yeah, well, that was what your team was supposed to do. You guys are the better team. Of course you're supposed to beat them. Of course you're supposed to be great. Now this is the first time where people are like, oh, no, maybe they're not the better team. I think these Boston Celtics, it's their time. They're doing that thing. And he's like, oh, you think this is over. You think I'm past the expiration date. So this is why it's so impactful. It's because it's coming as an underdog for the first time in his NBA Finals career.
Well, this is where LeBron cemented his legacy forevermore after winning in Miami. When he won as an underdog, he could say forever, well, Jordan never did that. Jordan never won. In this sport, you never win with the lesser team. But people through four games, it's kind of seismic to watch it happen. Because if Steph pulls this out over them, I believe we will think by the end of this, oh, they pulled the upset. They somehow, through four games, I believe people believe now Boston is better. The advanced metrics suggested we were underrating them. You see what they are with Robert Williams. Stan Van Gundy comes on here and says they're more talented. It's like varsity against JV when they're out there. And he also adds the qualifier. Maybe Steph can beat them with shooting, but it's not because he's more talented. Golden State is not viewed as the more talented team in this series at this age anymore, are they?
No, I mean, they're not as a group more talented, but I defy anyone to watch that game and say who the best player in this series is. It's not close. Jason Tatum's time is coming, and maybe Jaylen Brown's time is coming. But if you're watching this objectively, say who's the best player in these finals, not who's played the best, who's the best player? It's that guy because he's consistently doing it. These guys are not on his level. In terms of as good. Maybe they will be one day, but that day hasn't arrived yet. But you're right, overall, as a collection of talent, as we said, like we talk about Golden State.
But he's never gotten that, though. I mean, what I'm saying in the storyline, he's never gotten the benefit of, like, oh, shit, here's Steph Curry being better than everybody because he's the underdog. And when he's done with this, it'll be won because Steph Curry won it, and only because Steph Curry won it, as some of you question whether he could ever be a finals MVP.
Well, that's the stupid math that we're doing, right? Like, well, if he wins, it's like Dirk. Dirk's a loser, choker, soft, and then he beats Miami. He's like, greatest of all time, greatest shooting big man of all time. That happened overnight. I remember that happening overnight, where people consistently questioned Dirk, his toughness, about whether he's a one-trick pony, all of these different things. And he beats the Miami Heat in the finals, and overnight, champion. And people just stopped questioning Dirk. And he became beloved and celebrated unanimously.
And then moved over to Carmelo or the next guy or whoever the next guy is who can't win because you can't win playing that way.
I think in fairness, I think what's happening with Steph right now is not going to be a flippant narrative. It's just going to be additive, right? Like, Steph is already considered a great player. But I'd be curious, I mean, because Dan mentioned like, oh, yeah, Steph Curry's already got the respect. There's always kind of been this undercurrent, in my view, among players like LeBron, and frankly, bigger players that look at Steph and go, you can't be the most dominant guy in the league and be 6'2". That, like, there is a little bit of his peers going, we don't actually think he's the most dominant player.
Oh, Witty, did you miss what happened on Twitter last week?
I must have.
Where LeBron, someone tweeted, hey, Steph Curry, he's a problem or whatever, something, one of those generic, like, basketball Twitter remarks like, hey, this guy's really good or whatever. And LeBron hops in with, I've been trying to tell y'all, this dude is hyping him up. And I was talking about this with Zach Harper on the radio the other day. I said, you know what he's doing there? He's doing the time-honored tradition. If I get my ass beat by someone, I have to build them up to be the greatest, most unstoppable thing ever. Because otherwise, if he's just a normal guy, wait, I lost to some normal guy? Like, I got my head bashed in that many times? No. Every one of those guys now is elevating Steph, because the reality is this series, what it will accomplish beyond the bona fides of adding a finals MVP is the way he's doing it. He's not just doing it because, oh, he's on, if they win, oh, he's on the winning team and he's the best player on the winning team. It's, he's been dominant in all four games, and I assume is going to continue to be dominant. So if they end up winning, it's going to be, it's not just he won finals MVP. He grabbed that thing by the reins. And it wasn't because Clay hit a bunch of shots. And it wasn't because Draymond was so all around amazing. It was like, I did it. Me. Go ahead. Try and give it to Andre Iguodala this time. Try and give it to somebody else. You won't. You can't.
I mean, I was wondering when I saw all of the stuff happening around Draymond, who has turned himself into a pivotal figure in all of this. You have a very good way of stripping down all the storylines, all the noise, all the nonsense, and analyzing just the basketball. That all of it is theatrical and it's nice to talk about, but you don't have time for noise or distraction or silliness. Draymond Green empirically made his coach bench him in the fourth quarter of the last game. Mm-hmm. A, tell me how hard that was. You imagine for Steve Kerr to do. B, tell me what you think Draymond's reaction would have been if they'd lost that fourth quarter and gone down 3-1 after he had been benched. And what's real and what's just noisy around Draymond?
Right. So first of all, I got to quote my buddy Waz over at The Ringer, who, when they had this conversation about how hard it must have been for a coach with all that loyalty and history to bench Draymond, and Waz said, or a guy with eyes. Because anyone watching knew he was actively detrimental to them winning that game. Defensively, I thought he had a much better effort than game three, but offensively, he was scared. And I've never seen Draymond scared offensively. I'm not saying he's supposed to shoot 80 times a game or whatever, but I'm saying in terms of playmaking, being tentative, him and Wiggins on that one play did the thing from semi-pro where it was like back and forth, hot potato, hot potato, hot potato, hot potato, as it inched closer and closer to the rim. And I'm like, what's happening here? I've never seen Draymond be indecisive like that. So he wasn't having a good game. Draymond himself said on his podcast afterward that it's funny. He was like, yeah, you know, anything, if it's for the win, I'm here for it. I'll do whatever it takes for the win. But then afterwards, he starts talking about, when it happened, hell yeah, I was pissed and I was irate. And it took like Chris Chiozza and Juan Toscano-Anderson and some guys at the end of the bench talking him down pretty much for him to recognize and realize like, oh, this needed to happen because I'm not playing well. And he said that he credited that talk for allowing him to get back in the game and make a couple of big defensive plays, which he did. He said that was because those guys made me realize I was being selfish in that moment. But Dan, as you said, like, this is a results business. And so if they lose that game, yeah, I'm pretty sure Draymond is not happy and is saying, see, I told you so. And so he's definitely probably playing the results in that way. The other part about Draymond being benched was because Kevon Looney, who had played really well in these finals, was benched in game three for I don't know what reason. And they ended up getting destroyed on the offensive glass as a result. He played well in game four despite not starting. They started Otto Porter. And I think Steve Kerr finally realized, yo, I need to trust this guy. We play better when he's out there. And so he stuck with Looney down the stretch. And it was easier to make that decision to bench Draymond because of the way Looney played.
You don't think that's a hard decision, though, right? Because you say anyone with eyes, but I'm talking about all the other factors. I mean, of you've got the most volatile, combustible ingredient in your locker room, and you're running the risk in a fourth quarter of missing a few jump shots, and Draymond Green, you will have lost him. Draymond Green will be, I think, will be a problem after that game because you did not trust him and you benched him in that moment. I don't think that's as easy as you're making it sound.
No, it wasn't easy, particularly with Steve Kerr. I've seen him in a game seven play Harrison Barnes, who had been awful for seven whole games. But because Steve likes Harrison and Harrison had been a contributor throughout their tenure there, it was like, no, I'm going to trust him. I'm like, you had everyone who played on this roster in this game as a positive plus minus except for three guys, Harrison Barnes, Festus Ezeli, and Anderson Varejao. And Steve ended up playing all three of those guys in the fourth quarter of game seven because he liked them and because they contributed one way or another along the way. His trust overrided what was obvious. These guys aren't playing well. Now is not the time to put them in this with the series on the line. I agree with you. It was a difficult decision, I'm sure, for Steve. However, it's a difficult decision because of the emotion and the history. In the same way that, you know, I always marvel that Eric Spoelstra can be down three and he'll draw up a play for Dwayne Wade, who hadn't hit a three since December in a playoff game, right? What would possess someone to do that? It's like this nostalgia thing or whatever.
Ghosts.
Having said that, I don't think he would have lost Draymond for good. He obviously would have heard it for the next 48 hours. But I think Draymond is someone who's focused enough in the moment at the task at hand that he would have been fine by the next game. Now, in the offseason, maybe that would have been a conversation, particularly if they lose that game and they lose the series. Maybe that's a conversation that continues about, I don't know if I want to be here or whatever. But I think in the moment in the NBA Finals, I don't think he checks out. That's not what Draymond is like.
You say that, Amin. And I don't want to be total pop psychologist on this, but it is really rare for someone of Draymond Green's delusional confidence to be credibly questioned by front office member Amin El-Hassan on, dude, you were scared, delusionally confident guy. You're out there and you're scared. You're doubting yourself. I didn't imagine a scenario where you could puncture the delusional confidence of Draymond Green.
Yeah, I don't think, first of all, I don't think he's delusionally confident. I think one of the great things about Draymond is he's very, very grounded on who he is. Delusionally confident guy would have gone out and shot 30 times. I'm going to hit these shots. I'm nice with it. Draymond knows who he is as a player. No matter how out of control he gets emotionally with the refs, with fans, with other players, in terms of, okay, now play basketball, he has a remarkable ability to stay grounded and make the right play, make the high IQ play. That's who he is. I'm saying I've never seen him be indecisive like that. He's always the smartest guy on the floor. He knows where everybody is, right? He knows the play before the play before the play. And he's setting things up and yelling at guys to get out of the way so that Steph is going to run this way, I'm going to go that way, and all of a sudden we got a wide open shot over here or a wide open layup for somebody over there. He's that guy. And then in that game, game four, I saw him kind of be like, oh, what do I do with it? Like, just indecisive in a way I'd never seen. I'm sure if you ask, hey, were you scared? He's absolutely going to say no, right? He's not going to admit to that. But if you ask him, okay, were you indecisive? I think he'll credit like the size and the length of the Celtics defenders. But let's be real, man. When has that ever been an issue for him in his career against any team he's played for? We've never seen him be indecisive like this. And is that a temporary thing?
No,
is
but that's getting to him. I mean, it getting to him. If you're saying, if his mother's out here saying, I've never seen this Draymond, he's indecisive. Whittingham, close us out here with Amin.
All Steve Kerr's got to do, if he loses the game and everything is going wrong, just send him a text on his RAZR. Everything will be fine.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.